Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Mike Macri to the broadcast. Mike is the Chief Information Officer of Land O'Lakes, a $15 billion agricultural cooperative. In that role, Mike is responsible for leading the organization's digital transformation while overseeing the operations of information technology. Through his work at Land O'Lakes, Mike was awarded the Forbes CIO Innovation Award. Prior to joining Land O'Lakes, Mike worked for Ingersoll Rand, where he was the Vice President of Software Architecture and Strategy. He also held positions at G5 Technologies and Allied Signal Aerospace. Mike received his bachelor's degree in physics from Cornell University, where he was also a member of the varsity baseball team, and he also has an MBA from Duke University's Fuqua School of Business. I recently caught up with Mike in his office in the Twin Cities, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 2, Infrastructure, as we discussed the role of cybersecurity at Land O'Lakes, and Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we discussed innovation and how IT has evolved from a supporting function to an industry leader in innovation. We also discussed the digital revolution that is occurring in the farming industry, new technologies that his team is providing, management practices that he uses to help streamline IT, as well as a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as Strategic Facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Well, Mike Macri, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you.
Great to speak with you, Mike. I thought we'd begin. Your CEO, Chris Policinski, mentioned, and I'm quoting him here, that the digital transformation of the business, quote, demonstrates Land O'Lakes' leadership in helping to build the farm of the future with cutting-edge concepts and technologies. And I think it's really interesting, especially coming from arguably the oldest industry in the world, agriculture, that there is this tremendous transformation that the company is going through, but that your team is helping to lead. And I wonder if you could just tell us a bit about the methods you're using and the role that IT is playing in that digitization.
Sure. You know, in our IT organization here at Land O'Lakes, we are really working with our business leaders and everyone out in the field to help our membership, which is farmers and agricultural retailers, transform the way they think about technology. Everything from operations to the way they trade, to the way they deal with their customers. I mean, it really affects every aspect of everything they do and many aspects of everything we do here. But the one that's the most exciting, though, is how technology is transforming what happens on the farm. And I think we're just at the very beginning of that. But at Land O'Lakes, we want to be a leader in that space. We believe we help farmers with more decisions in agriculture and the way they grow, the way they make decisions in planting, the way they make decisions in environmental questions. And we believe that technology is just going to radically change the way they make those decisions in the future. And we want to be at the forefront of that.
You mentioned a variety of constituents here. As you mentioned, growers, you've got agricultural retailers, you've got your colleagues, of course. As you think about the change, the transformation that you're leading, and the various parts of that puzzle that need to come together in order to enact that change, can you talk about the process of leading them through some of the changes you're describing?
Just like any diverse environment, you have people who are all trying to do what's best for them and make the most out of the position they play. And so each group has different priorities, and it's working with each group, understanding what's in it for them, what do they really need, what are their expectations out of technology, what are their expectations as how it's going to help them grow or change or modify their business, that you really have to get close to. You have to really understand it. But as one of the largest farmer-owned cooperatives, one of the things that gives us a guiding principle, no matter who we're working with, is how does it impact the farmer? How does it make his life better? And I think that's pretty different from other companies who are going after this market space. Because if we can't find a value proposition in what we're doing that helps that grower in some way, shape, or form, no matter who else is involved in the supply chain, no matter who else is involved from our corporate portfolio, we tend to really take that back to that focus area and figure out really how it's going to work for them and focus on those issues.
Structurally, how do you have tentacles into the various constituent groups we described?
So what we've set up internally is I have really six businesses that I like to say I operate. A couple of them are focused internally, right? Mainly traditional enterprise IT. We got to keep the systems humming. We got to keep the networks humming. As well as projects. We're always implementing projects to support our business leadership team. And those are focused internally. They look very traditional. They're not a whole lot different from any other organization you'll see or enterprise. But then I have four other businesses where I'm focused externally. I'm focused on really how do we generate growth for our company first? How do we generate growth for our retailers? And how do we generate growth for our members? And they're small businesses for us, and they're pretty small in our portfolio, but they have different goals. They have different values. They have different metrics. And so we separate them from the enterprise IT to give them the flexibility to innovate, the flexibility to go out and talk with customers on a more regular basis. And we usually come up with very different solutions. And then we look at how those solutions can incorporate or leverage what we have at the enterprise level.
And given the fact that taking two themes we've already described, one, digital transformation and the certain skill sets that are necessary in order to enact that, together with the resources that you have that are reaching out into the six businesses, are there certain skills that in recent years have become more important as a result of the newer kinds of or new style of business that you're enacting here?
Yeah, I mean, one set of skills that's just, you know, it's always been important, but it's magnified now, is that business relationship skills. Hiring technologists who can really think like business leaders and really help our business leaders solve complex problems, whether it be market-based problems, risk-based problems. And so that is something that's always been there, but the focus and need is just so much greater. Add into that all the new technology that's out there, and there's tons of technological skills in the digital space and in the big data space and in other spaces like Internet of Things that need to support that vision. And so, you know, I'd say it's on two ends of the spectrum, right? We have this critical need for business leaders who understand technology, and we have this critical need of really specialists in this new technology to help apply it to really new problems and areas.
You joined me at the Forbes CIO Summit recently and were awarded as one of the inaugural Forbes CIO Innovation Award winners. And the submission that you had and the topic you described while you were on stage with me was the R7 tool. And I wonder if you could take a quick moment to give an overview of that as well as some of the value that the enterprise has derived from it.
In our market space, you know, farmers are faced with 40 to 50 decisions every day and over the course of their working season. And so one of the things that we set out to do 5 years ago was identify what are the most critical decisions that these farmers have to make and how do we help them make them in real time or in near real time. You know, for hundreds of years, a lot of farmers used to plant, you know, help nurture it with water to the best they can, and then harvest. And the world's changed, especially with all the genetic potential of seeds and all the other investments that are out there in the marketplace. So when we started on this journey, it was all about helping the farmer make better real-time decisions. What the R7 tool does, and it's almost like magic when you really think about it, is we are using satellite imagery, both historical and regular updates during the growing season, to help farmers first make a decision on what he's going to plant. Second, you know, choose the seed that he's going to plant. Third, do it in a way that's the most economically sustainable and has the highest economic returns for him combined. So we use variable rate seeding algorithms with it. And then fourth, we help him also determine the amounts of nitrogen to apply. All of that then goes into a computer in the cloud. It gets crunched, and in less than 10 seconds, prescriptions are delivered down to their iPad or their Microsoft device in the field, assuming they have a network connection, which is one of the biggest challenges that we have still. And then we port those prescriptions straight to planters, which drive themselves and plant these seeds in 2 to 3 inch increments with enormous accuracy, all driven by themselves using GPS. So, I mean, when you describe that scenario for a lot of people who aren't familiar with what's going on in America's farms, it sounds almost like magic. And what we've been able to bring is the true agronomic expertise on making those decisions. So we believe that's key to helping farmers become profitable, helping them become more sustainable, and doing it in the most efficient manner. And so you tie all that together. So we're helping, of those 50 decisions right now, we're probably helping them do 3 to 4. And we'd love to get after all the other decisions. And that's really where our vision is, to expand upon that platform to help them make other decisions in real time. How to do side dress fertilizer, when to harvest, when to plant, timing decisions, risk-based decisions, right? There's a lot of risk decisions out in the marketplace that haven't been solved for farmers. When should they take forward contracts? When should they sell early? How much inventory should they store? And all of that, I believe, can be enabled through technology. So I'm not sure we're going to do it all ourselves. We're looking for a lot of partners in that space, but we're pretty excited about it.
Well, first of all, what you've described requires a lot of data. But as you are beginning that journey and the data is just seeping in, presumably it's the sort of thing that gets richer as time goes on. Is that a fair way to frame it?
In agriculture, it is, right? So there's certain data elements that you want as long as you can get your hands on, and it makes those models better. But what's also different about agriculture and what we're dealing with is we're so dependent on weather, and we're so dependent on a biologic system that interacts with so many different variables that reacting to real world observations faster is actually a better outcome than trying to model or predict, you know, far into the future. Weather is the number one impact. So we're more focused on how do you react to weather events? How do you react to changes in your environment to help those farmers make the best decision? And so that's a little bit different approach than others. And it's not your traditional big data approach either. If we had all the growing data in the world going back to Roman times, I'm sure their techniques would be different. The land was a little bit changed and their behaviors would be very different. So, right. We're looking forward and we're looking how we react to different markets, different weather events quicker.
You began to talk about the need for an ecosystem of partners to deliver what you've described. It sounds like it's one that is growing. Can you talk a bit about where it stands now and how you've thought about building that ecosystem?
Sure. We have a program called Answer Tech where we help distribute other companies' technologies. You know, one thing we determined very early on was that we're not going to have all the best ideas in the marketplace. So through our Answer Tech program, we help other companies who have complementary technologies distribute them to the farm. But what we're also doing is with our Winfield data silo is we're developing a program that's going to be released later this year that really first and foremost ties all the data together, and second really does it in a way that protects farmers' privacy and retailers' privacy. And in agriculture, that's very important. So between those two programs, both Data Silo and Answer Tech, we're out there generating interest. We're out there educating farmers on how to use the latest and greatest technologies. And then we're enabling them to bring all that data together to use it for their benefit and create that ecosystem of development. So right now, I believe we have about 7 partners in our Answer Tech program, but we're pretty pleased that we have about 30 to 50 lining up to kind of work with us to go to the farm. So we're excited about that.
That's great. And how do you think about engaging them? Is there much that your IT team needs to put in place in order to gauge the success of those relationships? Are there, again, tentacles out to each of those to ensure that the information is collected in the appropriate way?
You know, we have a dedicated team who works on these partnerships now, and that was an investment we had to make once we started to get traction and momentum. And we look at these partnerships in lots of different ways. Some are startups, and so they need a little bit more handholding because they may not understand the full marketplace. And others are very established agricultural technology companies and some of our biggest partners on the manufacturing side as well, who may have an innovation that they want to bring to market. So we work differently with all shapes and sizes. I wish I could tell you it was a standard methodology at this point. But it's about, you know, pushing them through, educating them on how we sell, how we educate, and working with them to ensure that the data is protected, private, and controlled throughout all pieces of that technological mm-hmm. supply chain.
I'm sure several of the things we've talked about are the very things that are noted in your strategic priorities for the foreseeable future. Are there other aspects we've not talked about that make up some of the things that are on your roadmap right now?
Sure. You know, for us, we talked a lot about ag tech here, but I have the traditional enterprise objectives as well. So we have things like big data that's very important to start leaning into and seeing where that technology can take us. We also have investments in mobile, right? We're trying to make everything mobile as fast as possible that are going to have a huge impact on our company as well. So I'd say those two areas are pretty interesting for us.
And can you give us sort of a size and shape of your IT team? How big is the team? Sure. What percentage, if you care to offer it, is employee versus contractors? How distributed are they?
So we have a hybrid model here where we're actually heavily centralized in all the execution. But what I do have federated is control of the projects, the funding, and the project management. And so that sits really with our business unit leadership. A great relationship with them where we have a matrix responsibility. So I may have I call them mini CIOs, sit with the business. They set strategies with the business. They set plans for the business. They set funding with the business. The difference is every single thing that gets executed centrally. So we have really tight cost controls, really standard ways of executing everything we do, everything from standard images to standard data centers to standard platforms. So that's the hybrid model we use. As it relates to, you know, how we go to market and work with the other businesses, it really depends on the market opportunity. So we tend to change and adapt. When it comes to insource versus outsource and the relationships we have there, you know, I want the best person for the job at the lowest price and who's willing to adapt and change and develop. So right now we have probably about 60% of all of our IT work effort done internally. And 40% externally, and that 40% externally is also split between nearshore, onshore providers, kind of big consulting firms or innovative firms in the digital area, and offshore firms who help us do kind of more of the rote, nighttime, keep the guts of the systems working. So we're split about 60-40, but again, of that 40-20% are different value-added companies here locally or in the region.
Given the sanctity of data and its growing importance to IT specifically and the company more generally speaking, I got to imagine that security for that and among other reasons is becoming more of a topic of interest, to say the least. Can you talk a little bit about how that's evolved?
You know, security and cybersecurity are just a huge issue for any firm to deal with, for any CIO to deal with. And at Atlanta Lakes, we've made conscious investments over the last 3 years to improve our security profile, take more notice of it, take more upgrades, things like that, to just ensure that we're covering all our bases. But also, I'm a little bit more, I'm in a little bit better position than many of my peer and brethren out in the workforce, just simply because we don't have tons of intellectual property. We're not in defense. We're not a high target. I'm not processing credit cards here locally. So while we have to pay attention more, we have to stay on top of it. We have to do the basics right. And the technology keeps changing as well. Even despite all that, I'm a little bit luckier than those guys. But in the end, you know, it's all about staying on top of the trends and reacting faster and reacting to challenges faster. And I think having a new, more dynamic, creative workforce in that space has actually benefited us quite well.
We've talked about a whole range of trends across the conversation. Are there others, as you look out, say, 2, 3, 4 years into the future that are getting onto your radar and exciting you either personally or professionally?
Yeah, the one that we're really just starting exploring is the Internet of Things connected to AI, connected to automation, and where does that go? I mean, even in the areas of kind of other types of business back office responsibilities. So, you know, automation has been at the factory floor for years, right? There's always been robots at the factory floor. But where else is it going to go with all of this new technology and all of the Internet of Things investments that are coming out? That's one that fascinates us. I don't think we know exactly where we're going to experiment or apply with it yet, but it's something that we're keeping our eye on because it's definitely going to change lots of things for a lot of people. And it's about, you know, where do you pick and choose your bets to go after in that space? But it's pretty exciting.
And as you think about that topic, among others, when you're beginning to investigate how a new technology will apply back to the company, what methods do you use?
Yeah, so, you know, one is I'm highly engaged with several members of the venture community in the areas that are more specific to our company here, right? There's so many of them, I can't engage with all of them, but I try to make a point of getting out and seeing their portfolios at least once a year. And with a number of different venture community partners. I actually just took my team out there last week. So we got back, we reviewed, I think, 80 companies in 2 days. And these were not the beginning seed stage companies. These are companies in later stages, right, that have some momentum. And, you know, there's 4 or 5 of those companies that we'll probably do business with in the next 2 years that I believe can save us significant dollars. So staying on top of that's critical. But also, you know, working with your strategic partners that you already have, right? Getting embedded in their customer advisory boards, networking with your peer groups, going out there and doing those, at least your core strategic partners, talking with them annually about what their strategic plans are, understanding where they're making their big investments so that you can get access to that information and access to their capabilities earlier than maybe some others. So for me, it's a combination of strategic partnerships that we invest in and the VC communities. And I think the combination of the two give us a really kind of really good view of the marketplace and where it's headed.
Mike, we've been talking about the digital transformation that you and the team have been leading. I know that there's also a broader transformation that the company has been going through across the nearly 6 years you've been with the company. Can you talk a bit about that?
Sure. You know, when I came to Land O'Lakes in 2009, 2010, the company had just finished a portfolio reorganization and was really focused on our three core businesses that we have today. And during that reorganization, a lot of things happened. A lot of costs were controlled. A lot of companies left. Some things were changed out. And it was a tough time for the company to reset its balance sheet, reset its direction, reset its goals. And it's done very well doing that. But at that point, the IT organization was really in a unique state. Everything had been centralized, which was great because you didn't have to go through that piece of the transformation. But it had been starved for capital for quite a bit of time. And as the company began to grow and began to perform better, the expectations on the IT organization were just radically different. They were asking for growth, projects, new innovation, digital investments. And we went from an area where we had an organization and we had capabilities that were just not equipped yet to deal with enormous growth that we've seen over the last 6 years. And so going through that change was really challenging. You know, we had to start off with really encouraging people to think different in the IT organization. We brought in a ton of outside talent. We invested over $100 million in our core platforms just to upgrade them and get them to a place where they wouldn't fail every week. Upgrading our technologies, reducing our cost footprints, but while at the same time gaining value. And what that did was that created a lot of confidence in our business leadership that we could pull off the big projects. From there then, we started experimenting. We invested in a product called Endeca at a time as a startup, now it's owned by Oracle. But that product just did so many things for us in the eyes of our business leadership. It was almost compared to magic. And once you pull off a project like that where they could get insights and information in a way that they never could imagine before, it just started to snowball. They started looking at my team differently, inviting them to different types of strategic meetings. And from there, we then made that next jump to really invest in digital and create a team that focuses working with the marketing departments, the sales departments on growth. And so when you think about a typical IT organization, it's typically focused on running the day-to-day, keeping the lights on. And then all of a sudden, in a six-year time period where we're talking about precision agriculture and generating revenues and helping our members solve their problems on the farm, it didn't happen overnight. And it came with steps and it came with a lot of hard work. But it's something that I'd encourage other leadership to really think about. How are you going to get there? How are you going to convince your leadership teams to make that transformation like we did? Because from my whole career, it's been one of the most exciting journeys I've ever been on. And it's just exceptional to think about. And in a relatively short time, 6 year period, but big for an agricultural company.
And transformations like that, oftentimes there is a cost to do a lot of the process and technology change that's necessary that then yields benefit after that initial curve of investment, which for a lot of organizations, maybe those that are a bit myopic, it's an intimidating thing. How do you overcome that?
And that's one of the biggest challenges, right? But one of the things that I am super and hyper focused on is that it's the business leadership vision that we're achieving. And what we do is we spend an enormous amount of time working with them day to day in lots of different ways to help them see the path to getting to what they would like. They want insights and innovation and real-time analytics and real-time responses to market dynamics. And we can talk about the path on how you get from point A to point B. It's never a perfect path. You have to adjust it every 6 months, you know, in the world we live in today. But that type of relationship is critical. And it's not my path. It's not a technology path for the sake of technology. It's how do we leverage technology to achieve those business outcomes and business goals and objectives in a way that's more compelling than other investments they can make, right? Let's face it. We're all capital constrained. We all have profit targets. And so it's about creating a vision, working with them, and having it be their goal, their objective. And that's what's funded the extra dollars. It's taking it from other investments that they could make to see one that generates more return or generates a longer term return. And they're going to sacrifice things in the short term to get there. And that partnership is just critical.
Well, Mike Macri, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing the insights that have made you the successful IT executive you are. It's been a great conversation.
Right. Thank you, Peter.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.